So good evening, everyone. Right, good evening, and thank you very much for coming tonight. My name's Claire Sanders. I'm Director of Communications and Marketing at Cardiff University, and it's my pleasure to bring you this latest in our series of events with our partners, the IWA. Those of you who have been to these events before will know that you're in for very high-quality debate and question and answer sessions afterwards. The aim of the debate is to allow us to discuss issues that are pertinent, important to Wales, and we've had a whole series of fascinating debates so far. Now, often I take the opportunity to set the scene, but we have with us Dr. Rob Jones, who will be doing a scene-setting piece in a minute, and it's very difficult for me to say anything that he won't say, and I don't want to steal any thunder. But suffice to say that when Dr. Jones's reports come across my desk at Cardiff University, they're always an absolute joy. They do exactly what you want high-quality academic work to do, which is to be rigorous and evidence-based and to help policymakers. So his report last year showed that Wales has the highest imprisonment rate in Western Europe. It also showed that white offenders in Wales are given significantly lower average custodial sentences than any other ethnic minority group. And without his reports, I think so much of the penal system in this country would remain a dark art almost. The statistics that he'll share with you today will give you pause for thought, as they certainly have done to me as they've flown across the university and as we've shared them widely. As I'm sure Rhys Thomas in particular will highlight, this is a critical juncture for thinking about crime and justice in Wales as policymakers continue to react to the work of the Thomas Commission. And it's vital that future policy is shaped with reference to the widest possible set of stakeholders. So in that respect, we're very fortunate to have both the Children's Commissioner and Ruth Coombs from the Equality and Human Rights Commission here to offer their perspectives. I do hope you enjoy this evening's debate and that you can contribute your thoughts and questions later, and also during proceedings if you want to use the hashtag IWA debate. And afterwards, we have a glass of wine for those of you that would like to take longer. I'd like to thank Eathersheds Sutherland for their ongoing support in hosting these events. So all that remains for me is to hand over to Dr. Rob Jones from the Wales Governance Centre at Cardiff University to give a short scene-setting presentation outlining his research on this area. After that, you will be in the very capable hands of Jenny Rees, the Home Affairs correspondent for BBC Cymru Wales. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy the evening.
Good evening, everyone. Claire said it'd be a short overview, so I'll have to keep this down below the hour. So just as a bit of a scene setter to the scene setter, so to speak, some of the things I'm going to be talking about have been unearthed over the past 18 months as part of a project at the Wales Governance Centre at Cardiff University titled the Justice and Jurisdiction Project. Now, the aim of this project, which is jointly funded by the Economic Social Research Council and the Welsh Government, was to produce a series of reports that would be fed into the work of the Commission on Justice in Wales. Now, as part of the project, we submitted five reports, three in relation to finance and two in relation to, I think, policy. We can probably put it in that bracket. But alongside that, we've also been able to produce a number of reports, which Claire has kind of already mentioned, which we've referred to as fact files. And anybody familiar with the Bromley briefings that are published by the Prison Reform Trust will see a rather similar format. The aim being to provide as much information as possible to the reader where we're actually able to access it. And over the course of the past 18 months, I think we've published four of those which have dealt with imprisonment and have dealt with sentencing. And I think that they have played a role in helping to construct and situate Wales as a unit, a standalone unit of analysis in and of itself. So rather than simply Wales being, in a sense, subsumed as part of an England and Wales debate or an England and Wales jurisdiction, it's actually looked at Wales, the Welsh context, and what we have here in Wales. that has required an awful lot of work in terms of freedom of information requests to get that information, and that continues. So I just want to provide a bit of an overview and hopefully to give some of the latest data, some of which we've not actually published yet, because it only came to us maybe a week ago or a week or so ago. So there are 5 male prisons in Wales that hold, of course, you know, a mixture of convicted, unconvicted, sentenced and unsentenced prisoners. I'll say 5, but sometimes 6 can also be banded around. So we have HMP Berwyn, which is the largest and the newest in Wrexham. We have HMP Swansea. We have HMP Park, which has a children's unit, which I'll come on to, and is the only private prison in Wales. We have HMP Cardiff, and we have HMP Usk Prescoid. They are managed as a single unit, hence why we have 5, but both of those prisons do 2 very different things. One is an open prison, Prescoid, and one is a prison that deals almost exclusively with prisoners sentenced for sexual offences. When looking at the numbers of people held in Wales, I tried to do as we approached the end of 2019, people did a kind of, this was me 10 years ago and this is me now. Well, I couldn't, unfortunately, do the decade challenge that well because the MOJ data for 2009, December, wasn't available. But from March 2010, which is the closest we can get, to December 2019, we've seen the number of people held in prisons in Wales has increased by 76%. Now, that is largely due to HMP Berwyn opening in February 2017 and an expansion to Park as well. But you can see that there's been a rise during that decade. As Claire has already mentioned, our report last January and again our follow-up report in August, the report in January dealt with data from 2017, the report in August dealt with 2018, and I'm going to talk about 2019 data now. But what we actually found is that when you break down the data for Wales and England based on home address, the rate of imprisonment in Wales relative to its population, and of course in England relative to its population, was higher. And at that time, England and Wales had the highest rate in Western Europe, which of course allowed us to paint this picture that of course Wales has a higher rate than any other country in Western Europe. But one of the things I think that was lost in that headline and in that release was that there was a belt and braces approach to this, in that on the one hand we used home address, so the home address of prisoners prior to entering custody, and that showed a higher rate, but also we used the kind of more conventional in-country measure. Now, in other jurisdictions, they don't have to look at home address per se because there are no 2 countries within the one jurisdiction, so that's why we had to do it for Wales. But the in-country measure is, as Berwyn reaches its operational capacity, Wales is beginning to kind of set off into the sunset, so to speak, in terms of the numbers. So the latest figures we have and the numbers for January will be published by the MOJ tomorrow morning. But the data we have now is that there are 159 people per 100,000 in prison in Wales compared to 139 prison people per 100,000 in England. Now, I'll come on to this at the end, but when you bear in mind the comments of Robert Buckland about the need for a new prison in Wales, I think that's a nice kind of little pivot into a debate after. But the question of why remains. We as academics haven't got round to looking at it, and it's not because it's not important or because we're not interested in it, but because of issues of capacity, and it's an enormous question. Not I don't mean in relation to the number of prisoners in Wales, but why are so many Welsh people in prison? Why is there a higher rate than England? There's lots of data we don't have that can allow us to answer that question. We asked the Sentencing Council for disaggregated data. It says it could do it, but it doesn't actually routinely publish it. So there's all kinds of questions there. And for reasons of time, I haven't got the space to talk about it, but also probation rates as well. The number of people serving a court order, again, relative to population, was higher in Wales than it was in England. Again, why? And that was published in our report in August for anyone interested in pursuing that. A major issue, I think, which we'll be talking about tonight is women in prison. Even if you find someone who doesn't know anything about imprisonment in Wales, people tend to know that Wales doesn't have a women's prison. It's kind of a well-known fact, but it's something probably one of the most recognised facts about the system in Wales. All Welsh women sentenced to prison, of course, serve their sentences in in England. At the end of December, Welsh women were in 11 of the 12 prisons in England. In September, they were in all 12. I've been collecting the information on Welsh women in custody since 2013. So out of the 24 readings in that time, the highest number I've ever seen was in September of last year, 279 Welsh women in prison. In 2018, 22%, one in five of all women sentenced to prison in Wales were sentenced for a month or less. Again, it's something that Claire has already touched upon. We've also, over the last 18 months, begun to collect information broken down by ethnicity. Now, the colour, the yellow bar you'll see there is the data for 2018, and the red bar is the data for 2019. The information we use is from the 2011 census on populations in Wales, but the prison data comes to us. We've got four quarters for last year, and the rates are based on that. Excuse me. So you'll see there that the relative to population, the number of white people in prison from Wales went down last year, but the numbers increased for every other group. Just to put, to kind of think this through, so for every 10,000 white people in Wales, 14 were in prison. For every 10,000 black people in Wales, 91 were in prison. For every 10,000 Asian people in Wales, 28 were in prison. For every 10,000 people of a mixed background, 41 were in prison. Again, this remains something which we have yet to really, I think, really take off. And these data are consistent from 2017, 18, and 19. Custodial sentence length is an issue well and truly on the political agenda at the moment. But even before any name changes are made to policy in Whitehall, sentences are already getting longer. So 2 years ago, 1,197 Welsh people were serving sentences of 4 years or more. Or should I, no, that's 2019. That's now. But there's been a 12.5% increase in 2 years in the number of prisoners serving 4 years or more. To put that into context, in 2017, prisoners from Wales serving 4 years or more represented 35% of the prison population. It's now 40%. So even before those name changes, if you like, those policies have been unveiled, we're already beginning to see the lengthening of sentences in Wales as we get that data. The use of short-term sentences has declined, but they're still used, as I've mentioned, in relation to women. And you can see there in 2017, on average, 546 Welsh prisoners were serving sentences of less than 12 months. It was 391 in 2019 as an average. Maybe a little bit of good news, probably a bit welcome. And I think that this, again, might certainly contribute to the discussion. We know there are two custodial establishments in children, the Secure Children's Home, Hillside in Neath, and HMYY Park in Bridgend. Over the past 10 years, again, a kind of decade challenge, we've seen the number of children in custody come down from 142 as an average to 25 children in 2019, an 82% reduction. That said, concerns, of course, remain about conditions in the secure estate, and they've been raised by Her Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons very, very forcefully. The conditions and the complaints about conditions, of course, extend to the male prison estate and the estate that we have in Wales. Over the past 18 months, our reports have shown record numbers of alcohol, drug and weapon fines in Welsh prisons, record numbers of assaults on staff, prisoner-on-prisoner assaults. 2016 was the worst year on record for deaths in custody. Though the focus tends to be on self-inflicted deaths, what's referred to as natural deaths has also been an increasing problem, raising all kinds of questions about prison healthcare, an area, of course, it's responsibility of the Welsh Government and the health boards. Also issues of what was often referred as riots or disturbances. At HMP Park, despite holding just 2% of the population, in 2018, 9.3% of all riots were at Park. So almost 1 in 10 of all riots in England and Wales or disturbances or concerted indiscipline was at Park. Self-harm, again, this graph excludes Bedouin. So this isn't about a population increase per se, but we can see that the rates of self-harm have continued to increase in Wales, and the latest data for England and Wales shows that those numbers have increased. We won't know the Welsh picture until the next quarter. So the final slide, I think that there are... you know, there are some really, really key issues for us to discuss here. But the real point I want to make, and I think it's a nice kind of shoehorn into this, is that we're at a real crossroads here, I think. We have a UK government that is planning to do some very different things with prison than perhaps we would maybe wish or want to talk about. Longer-term sentences. Robert Buckland QC's claimed, the Lord Chancellor, that he would, and I quote, love to see another prison in Wales. And the other offshoot is that we have the work of the Commission on Justice in Wales, and we're lucky to have Rhys with us tonight to talk about that. No pressure. We have a potentially an alternative direction here in Wales, and I think that opens up all kinds of discussions about what an organic Welsh criminal justice policy may actually look like.
We probably only have a good picture of what's going on in Wales in the last 2 years since you've become the FOI king. Mm-hmm. And so until now, we didn't really have this view, which is your fault, really.
Yeah.
If we have an idea, first of all, then, from what everyone thinks from the panel, if we go around, find a little bit about what your viewpoints are, where you're coming from, but also if we can start to answer whether you think there is a role for prisons in modern Wales. If we start off first with Ruth, Head of Wales for the Equalities and Human Rights Commission. If I give you, I won't give you a time limit, but if you'd like to start us off.
Thank you very much. I think it's a really interesting question, and I think it's a real challenge for us in Wales to consider what Wales might look like, what the criminal justice system might look like in Wales. We know that there are arguments for having prisons located close to where people live. And so when you're in a system for which there will always be a small number of people for whom a custodial sentence might be appropriate, if we were to get rid of all our prisons in Wales, for our men, we might be in a similar position as we are with our women, that they are dispersed around the whole of the UK and therefore have no access to family and to homes. And if you look at the Bangkok rules that came through from the United Nations a few years ago, one of the things that they looked at in terms of prisoner health was actually being located close to home. So it's a really complicated question. But I think it needs to be set in the context of that being one small part of a whole. Mm. And I think we need to look at the whole system, and we need to look at... if we look at the issue of women's prisons, do we build a women's super prison in Neath? It's been bandied around a few times. Or do we look at the underlying problems and the underlying pressures? Is it cost effective to even consider building a prison for an offender population that is serving sentences of less than a month? I mean, the amount of money for at least it takes to get people through that system and they serve a sentence for a month, let alone the social and emotional harm, the harm to people's mental health and well-being, the harm to families, families being torn apart. If you live in Aberystwyth and you're in Eastwood Park, your children won't see you for the whole of the time that you're in prison. So I think that we need to be thinking more holistically, and we need to be thinking about having a more human rights-based approach, and a human rights-based approach across whatever the system is that we think this hybrid system should look like. We've had some interesting advances in HMP Berwyn, for example, where human rights was built into the system from the beginning. That's had mixed reviews, mixed reactions, but it was about trying to do something different and doing something differently. But I think we need to take a step further from doing the same things differently, which is perhaps what they're doing, trying to do in North Wales, to doing different things differently. So we look at the root of the problem, and we look at the connections between offending and poverty, social deprivation, educational attainment or lack of educational attainment, and all those things that build into that picture And I just don't think we should be looking at it in isolation. And I think it's really important that we also look at the wider secure estate and the things that I've been told when visiting medium secure units where offenders, particularly male offenders, are being diverted towards the end of a six-year sentence in the last 6 months. So that actually, from their perspective, increases their sentence because they then go into a secure unit for in a much more long-term and unsettled place. So we're not using the mechanisms that we've got in place at the right time either. So I think we need a big overhaul of the whole system, and I think the Commission on Justice for Wales is a good starting point for trying to expand that out and trying to get to the root causes of why so many people from Wales, where we've got the highest levels of poverty, the highest levels of disabled people, lowest levels of attainment, and that equals more people in prison. There's something fundamentally wrong somewhere.
Thank you. So if we come along then to Rhys, both experienced from the Thomas Commission, but also as a criminal barrister working, I believe, with the tribunals as well. So give us your perspective.
The short answer is yes, there is a role for prisons in Wales. But that doesn't detract from the fact that there is a huge issue in Wales. And I'd like to reiterate what you said at the beginning, Jenny, about Rob Jones's contribution. Rob's contribution has been immense. He has highlighted that there is a particular Welsh issue. The fact that he had to find that out through FOI requests, several hundreds of FOI requests, it's scandalous. He has been banging this drum to anyone who would listen, and more importantly, to those who won't listen. And it's fair to say Rob has made himself quite unpopular in some circles.
More unpopular than I was already.
Yeah. Yeah. He has put his head above the parapet, and he has had some bullets fired back towards him. I remember when the fact file first came out, the rumours we were getting back from certain circles that the fact file was wrong, that they fundamentally wrong. There's several wrong things in the fact file. We question this, and the answer we had back was Wales doesn't have the highest imprisonment population per head population in Wales, in Western Europe. That Guernsey has more imprisonment per head than Wales. Now, Guernsey, an island with a smaller population than Anglesey, and that was the best they could come up with. There is a huge issue, an issue we need to address. We need to rebalance the system. The fact that 67% of the MOJ budget is spent on prisons is scandalous. It doesn't work. Of course, there will always be circumstances when some people, male and female, have to go to prison. But we are sending far too many people to prison for far too long.
Lovely, thank you. Sally, Children's Commissioner for Wales. We'll tease out a lot of issues, yeah, but immediately, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I want to talk about prisons for children. I mean, children are, of course, affected by adult imprisonment hugely, as Ruth's already mentioned, where they have close relatives in prison. But to talk about children, my answer to your question would be no. I don't think there's a place for prisons for children. As we've heard, it's actually one of the few real social policy successes we've seen, actually, over the last decade has been the huge drop in children coming into custody. It's actually just gone up again to 33, I'm afraid, from the low 20s it was at the end of the year last year. But, you know, as small numbers, it is open to that kind of fluctuation. But it is a huge change. So 151 in prison in 2008. So to be down to 33 is a big change. Two of those are girls. There always seems to be either zero, one or two girls, and there have been in the 5 years I've been commissioner. So there's only a very small number we're talking about here. They have committed some of the most serious crimes that we might imagine, and therefore I do feel there's a place for secure accommodation. For those children, as much for justice for their victims, because we're talking about serious sexual and violent offences often in these cases. However, we have to remember that alongside that, we're talking about this tiny population who face some of the most complex issues of any children in Wales. And are really amongst our most vulnerable children in Wales. They will almost all have faced very serious early trauma in their life. Abuse and neglect will be very common in their backgrounds. Very many of them, too many of them, have been in our care system and ended up in our prisons. Too many of them, again, have got learning difficulties, speech and language problems, are neurodiverse. So their profile is one of real complexity and vulnerability, and actually a very similar profile to our population of children who are also being held but under secure welfare orders. And that's where the girls with the same backgrounds tend to be. And we do need to have a different kind of accommodation for these children. I visit Park and Hillside regularly, and I've also visited Werrington, which is where children from North Wales tend to end up in Stoke-on-Trent. And however hard they try, and I would say in Park in particular, they've been trying very hard in the last few years, and in inspections it comes out as the least worst place for children to be held in prison, which is not to say that they should be there. And the people in Park, the staff in Park would say they shouldn't be here. This is still a prison. It feels like a prison when you walk in. You can hear adults baying at you through windows as children are admitted to the prison. And it's very hard to make it feel like anything but a prison. It's horrible for their visitors when they visit them. So we shouldn't have prisons. We should have something else. There are plans for something else, something called the Youth Justice Blueprint, which I'll happily talk about in a little bit.
Lovely, we'll come on to that. Rob, I think we've got a sense of what you think, but shock us.
No. By the way, on the Guernsey thing, not that I'm going to let it go. So it was actually Jersey, so they got it wrong even then. So there are more people in prison from the postcode area of CF5 in Cardiff than Guernsey. But, you know, I'm going to let it go now. In preparation, it's been really interesting actually preparing for this, because very often the head's pressed against the page and looking at the numbers and the figures and prison this, but never really stopped to kind of take a step back and think about the confinement. And that to me is the issue. I know we talk about prisons, but the issue of confinement, I think, is where the problem lies. The idea that we can deal with some of the most complex social problems by confining them. I mean, even if we take serious offences like violence, very violent person, seen lots of cases recently, actually, Wales Online, typically, but lots of cases, a violent person, and that person's been given 4 years. And you think, OK, so we put a violent person in an institution where we know violence is very, very important, particularly male prison, masculinity, hyper-masculinity. Someone stares at you, you stare at them. If they punch you, it's actually part of the currency. So we put violence plus violence and abracadabra, we get violence. So, I mean, you know, that's not to say that we absolutely need to take violence seriously. And that's part of the point, that the idea that confinement can help us to overcome some of these really complex challenges, I think, is never quite really got at. And related to this is all this data and all of the reports and, you know, for years and years and years, people have critiqued prison. A colleague recently put a load of their old books in the common room, staff common room, and said, you know, help yourself. And I was going in for something different. I picked up a book and I flicked it over, 1965, and the issues that were being described are the same ones we're talking about today. And I think, what is it about, how bad does it have to get where we as a society, or more importantly, the government, and the government responsible, whoever that may be, is willing to say, we need to kind of claw this back. And just to kind of end on this, there's a book that I've been reading, although a few box sets have got in the way, but I'm still trying to get through it. It's called Texas Tough by Robert Perkinson. And there's an account in that about the history of the prison in the north of the United States. The history in the south is very different, inextricably linked to slavery. But in the north is very different. And there were two models, New York and Pennsylvania. And there were competing models. But what was really, and Charles Dickens came over to Pennsylvania and they had a look at it, but central to that ethos was the reformatory and the enthusiasm for this institution. This was going to solve all of the social problems that were blighting places like Pennsylvania and New York. But even when that prison, even though those two prisons were being built, Perkinson describes that there were doubts.
And this, I think, is key today. There's two points which are key. One, that the reformatory, the prison, had promised more than it could deliver. And I still think that's relevant today. We send people to these institutions and almost hope that they'll sort it out. What an unrealistic policy that these complex problems can be dealt with in this system. And the second point that Perkinson said is, despite those problems, people wanted more. They knew there were concerns about it had overpromised, it couldn't deliver, but people still wanted more of this institution. There was a buzz, there was almost excitement, there was a belief, a faith that it could work. It didn't work then, and it hasn't worked for 200 years since. And I think in answer to the question that we absolutely have to think about what a future Welsh justice system could look like with prisons well and truly pushed out the way, why we can think about what probation or what alternatives would really look like and give sentences a proper option when they're handing sentences out.
If we can start looking at women in particular now. Rob, if you don't mind, I know you've just talked a lot. Tease out a little bit for me about the discrepancy between women, and you'd looked into women being imprisoned for offences that men might not, because then we can start looking at what are some of the alternatives to that then, if there's a problem here.
Yeah, I mean, the short is it that women are more likely to be sentenced for non-violent offences, and I think that is then reflected in the fact that they're more likely to receive shorter term sentences. The data there about one in five sentenced for a month or less. I mean, you know, when we think about what will happen to their children in that process, and this of course kicks up a question about social care. I ran these figures yesterday actually that 93% of those sentences were at the magistrates' court, and a third, in fact 33.1% in 2018, of all custodial sentences handed to women at the magistrates' court in Wales were for a month or less. So one in three of all women sentenced to prison at the magistrates are for a month or less. So I think that therein lies the question about the alternatives for sentences.
So an inequality coming out there. Priest and perhaps Ruth, what are the alternatives then? What should we be doing to minimise that, to stop that?
Generally, women are committing different type of offences to men. So that's why you get the kind of the shorter sentences. For example, my grandmother in the early 80s spent time in Puckle Church, the predecessor of Easter Park, for not paying her TV licence as a protest for S4C. She actually wore it as a badge of honour for the rest of her life. But why on earth did the magistrates think it was a good idea to send a woman, a chapel-going woman in her 50s, to prison for not paying a TV licence? Baffles me till today. The alternatives, well, the alternatives are there. We have had women centres for decades in the United Kingdom. They work. It's proven that they work. It's proven that short sentences for women do not help them. It doesn't tackle the issues. And women offenders are often very different to male offenders. They are more likely to be victims of domestic abuse. And what they need will not, as Rob said, confinement in a prison will not assist them. A lot of women sent to prison are sent to prison for being prolific shoplifters. And, you know, I've prosecuted, I've defended women when I started my practice who have been sent to prison for being prolific shoplifters. These women weren't getting some sort of a buzz out of shoplifting. These women were drug addicts. They were alcoholics. These women who suffered immensely over the years. Many of them had been abused as children. That led to them being getting into abusive relationships. So we've got to look at alternatives for women. We cannot, and I think we should be proud that we haven't got a women's prison in Wales. I know it causes difficulties, and we have had a prison for women in Wales in the past. Brecon Prison housed many women over the years. But I think we should see it as a badge of honour that we haven't got a women's prison, and use it as an opportunity to look at the alternatives, look at the work of the women's centres, work of women's centres such as Liverpool, which have been doing incredible work, and it's a proven track record that it does work, whilst on the other hand, it's a proven track record that short sentences for these women do not help at all. It's a revolving door.
And I know that we've got the Pathfinder Service in North Wales, North Wales Women's Centre up in North Wales, but it sounds as though there's an inequality on the very face of it here, isn't there?
Absolutely. There is definitely an inequality, and the fact that women are being imprisoned for non-violent offences just in a 21st century beggars belief. Quite often, in addition to the things that Rhys has talked about, quite often women are in prison for non-payment of fines. Well, if you can't pay your fines, it, to my mind, you need to be looking at the root cause of why women are in poverty. Women can't pay their fines because they're in poverty. And if they're in poverty, then we need to be looking at the reasons for that. Yeah. Are they disabled women? We know that women who are disabled, women who are lone parents, yeah, are more likely to be living in poverty, yeah, in Wales. We know from our Is Wales Fairer 2018 report that Wales has got the highest levels of poverty in the UK. So we need to be joining the dots. Mm. And we need to be looking at the underlying reasoning. And also, we've been, you know, there's also a business case for not sending women to prison. And don't build a super prison that costs £50 million. Use some of that, a quarter of that, a tenth of that, and you can start to build some alternative services and provision where women will get support. So women who are drug or alcohol dependent can get the support that they need, can get the work that they need with that. So we have more of a women's centre approach to it, so that women who are fleeing domestic violence and perhaps shoplifting because actually they haven't got any other option have got another means of getting the support that they need. Yes, a lot of women shoplift. If you look at the underlying causes for that, you'll find people saying, well, I either shoplift or my children don't eat. Well, what do you do? And we know that, as Sally has quite rightly said, the impact on children and on the women themselves of not seeing their families while they're in prison is terrible. Even, you know, you may think it's only for 4-6 weeks. If that's a small child, an infant, that's a very long time. And I don't know about other people in the room, but when I read about that young woman who went into labour on her own in a prison cell a few months ago and her baby died on her own, that is outrageous, and we've got to do something different.
Jenny, can I just give a specific example? Ruth touched on the financial cost of it. Cost per place for women is £49,500. For centres, if you send a woman to a centre, it'll cost just over £2,000. Yeah. And that's without starting looking at all the other costs that's associated with it. So,
because then, of course, there is the spiral that perhaps if she loses her home, so does the child.
Yeah.
And not all cases, but most will be the woman as the child, the caregiver. So there's all of that. And so, Sally, the ramifications socially of women going to prison.
It has a huge impact on children, and it's quite a hidden issue because, of course, it's a stigma to have a parent in prison. So often schools don't know about it. Those around children don't know about it. Families keep it hidden. They go and stay with their mam gi or their grandmother for a bit, or an auntie or a neighbour, but they do come into care as well because parents go to prison. Men in prison are fathers as much as women are mothers, but they're less likely to be the sole caregiver. So women going to prison tends to have a bigger effect on children, and it is huge. But we know the outcomes for those children are poorer than for other children, and there are. And it is a hidden issue. So some of the prisons are doing their best and doing a good job in making sure that they're linking in with schools. Some of the prisons are doing parents' evenings where teachers from Welsh schools in Wales are coming in and doing parents' evenings with men in prison. But you know, all of that is sticking plaster, really, on top of the core issue, which is that when you're sentencing, particularly a single mother, to prison, then you're sentencing the child as well.
We'll stick with children. You've mentioned, the policy is going the right way for reducing the number of children who are going into the criminal justice system altogether. But is there more, actually, that we've got the power to do already to reduce the numbers who are going into it at all and actually have more capacity to cope in Wales with, whether it be Hillside, you know, and have a broader approach there?
Yes, it's something that I've been pushing really hard on is to improve our secure accommodation all around. So that includes those sentenced to custody and those who have been placed under a secure order. So we definitely could do better on that. I mean, we've only got Hillside as a secure children's home, only one. It's in, you know, southwest Wales. We've got nothing for children in North Wales, for example. So we could do more with our facilities. A big issue is the non-devolved nature of it all, that somewhere like Hillside doesn't have any control over which children are coming in under sentence. So there are far more English children placed in Wales under a sentence than there are Welsh children staying in Wales. So this month, tonight, there are 38 English children, I think, in prison who are English in Wales and in custody in Wales. Some of them are in Hillside and some of them are in Park. And that's more than there are, of course, Welsh children. There are 19 Welsh children here. So we've got this thing of, well, English children coming here who are themselves a long way from home. Mm. We've got Welsh children going across the border too, and yet the other systems around them are devolved, so they're moving into different education systems because there's education provided on site. Children who are Welsh-speaking are rarely getting a Welsh-speaking service over the border, including their education, you know, making sure that children, when they come out and while they're in, have a good connections with services that will help them thrive when they leave prison is much harder for these small institutions when they're dealing with a plethora of systems and local authorities and health boards. You know, if we could have children close to home and have all those services wrapped around them, we'd do much better at when they do come out in the community, making sure that they have what they need. Instead, far too many of them are going out to really inadequate situations, really unsafe situations, bed and breakfasts, hostels, back to an unsafe home. And some of them, you know, for some of them, being in custody or in a secure accommodation has been in many ways very traumatic, but in other ways quite secure. Stay in terms of, you know, having some trustworthy adults around them, having three meals a day and that kind of thing. So, you know, we need to get the before and the after after much better. We've got slightly lower rates of children, but it's very marginal, of children coming into the youth justice system in Wales than in England. But you know, we want to get a few of them coming into custody from there as possible.
You delve there into that kind of jagged edge that I know Rob's talked about a lot with this, because some things are devolved and not. But Rhys, with your Thomas hat on, your Thomas Commission hat on, is there still more that we should be doing better with the powers that we've got before we go asking for any more, though? When you think of, you know, mental health, drugs, housing.
Yeah, if I just finish on children very quickly, it's been a great success story that we've got the numbers down. But what people forget is the small number which is left, these children have some terrible, real complications which take a lot of time, lot of resource, lot of effort. And having these kind of several different masters, not having this kind of wraparound approach, whole system approach as Sally mentioned, is making things far more difficult. Yes, I think in Wales, we could work together much better. The system in Wales is far too complicated. You know, we've got the local health boards, all these local authorities, all these what's the name of the body?
Regional partnership boards.
You've got
boards.
Public service boards. All these different boards. And you speak to I spoke to Chief Constable of South Wales Police, and he feels sometimes that he just spends all his time going from one committee to the next, talking about lots of the same things in these committees. So I think we need to streamline. I know it's very difficult, especially for Labour politicians, to try and streamline the local authorities in Wales, but something needs to happen because we aren't working together well enough.
I mean, something that I should mention is that the government published something called the Youth Justice Blueprint and a blueprint for women in custody as well last year, which I expected there to be a lot of noise about and a lot of fanfare when it came out, because it was about the whole system. It wasn't just about custody. But within that, there was a proposal agreed with the Ministry of Justice, and I believe it's still agreed under a new government, that all Welsh children, I think the same for women, will be held in Wales from that in the future, and not in prisons, but in, you know, multidisciplinary, therapeutic, secure centres. Nearer to home. And I was so excited when I saw this. I thought, this is what we've been asking for. But it's been very quiet. And there was very little fanfare about it. And I have sought reassurances more than once from ministers that this is real and this is a real plan. But I've been told it is. But it seems to be a very long-term plan. So, you know, I think we're talking at least a decade. It's not something that's going to happen next year. But there's a desperate need for that. There's opportunities coming up. The contract with Park Prison is ending in the next couple of years. So there are decisions to be made. I think everyone knows what we need. It's just having the capital and the will, the political will, both in Westminster and in Cardiff to get it done.
But the trouble at the moment, Jenny, is you don't know who's accountable. So these blueprints are great, but there's no clear accountability. Who are you holding to fault then if these aren't done properly? Because you've got all these different masters, nobody at the end of the day is held accountable for failings, because everyone's blaming each other.
I think we've got a collective responsibility to ensure that these blueprints, because we were very excited about the women and children's blueprints as well, that, you know, this is a big opportunity for Wales to do something different, to be a bit more of a trailblazer. But we know that we're very good in Wales at developing strategy and long-term policy and what good looks like. But we're not so good at following that through. And on the question of accountability, it is difficult. And I do think that sometimes innovative ideas kind of fall down that hole in the middle between, have we got the competence to do it, have we not got the competence to do it? And I think we need to be a bit bolder. And I think there needs to be a bolder steer from the centre, so that we can actually start to really put a person-centred approach that is a human rights-based approach into play in Wales, so that we can do things differently, so that we haven't got as many repeat offenders, so that we don't get the long-term shoplifters, because we've tackled those root causes and we've looked at it from a rights-based approach, which isn't necessarily a soft approach. It's a different way of doing it that is going to tackle those inequalities that underline and undermine people and address mental health problems, address neurodiversity, people with learning disabilities, because far too many people with learning disabilities or neurodiversity end up in contact with the criminal justice system because things haven't been put into place early enough. Yeah. So early in terms of age and early in terms of journey.
One of the things from Rob's bit of work that came out was the overrepresentation of people from ethnic minorities within the criminal justice system. Anyone I spoke to around the time trying to suss out what on earth was going on there didn't know. Can any of you, is there a theory? What's going on there?
I don't think judges and magistrates in Wales are inherently more racist than judges and magistrates in England. There's something going on.
Faint praise.
Yeah. There's something going on. It's not obvious, because the figures are very small. Mm. So that's difficult.
Yeah.
County lines could be an issue. People coming from larger UK cities, and they tend to be people of ethnic minority backgrounds. That could skew the figures. But as Rob highlighted, work needs to be done in this. So there's obviously an issue there. It really needs to be addressed. And the fact that this issue has been raised because Rob has sent in several FOI requests, it just is not good enough. This data needs to be available. Yeah. You need to go on a website, you need to be able to click on it, you need to be able to see it straight away.
And certainly it's the same case for in terms of women, that there's overrepresentation of black women in the criminal justice system. It's not solely around the big, it's everywhere. So there has to be something institutional there. And it might be unconscious bias. It might not be something that is as overt, but there is something about the people that operate the justice system, our judges, our magistrates. Do they look like the society that they serve? And until we've got much more representation, so that the people that are sitting on that side of a bench looks more like people that are in Wales and more like people that are coming into the system, there's not going to be that understanding, and there's likely to be that discrepancy that will persist. Because we know that institutional racism does persist, and it's not conscious. It's unconscious, and it's systemic rather than the individual people that are.
And the figures are appalling within the justice professions.
Absolutely.
We published the figures for the first time ever. The figures were made available, the percentages in Wales, and the figures in the CPS in Wales, within the judiciary. I think at one point, and it's fairly recent, there's only one ethnic minority judge in the whole of Wales.
I think they moved.
She did move. She moved to Slough. Now more have been appointed, but it's still only three. It is appalling. The police have tried to appoint more, but it's still 1.2% of South Wales police of a BAME background. It's a fair point. We are not people of ethnic minorities are not represented within the professions.
And
in
of
Wales.
Course, broader structural inequalities like higher levels of poverty and unemployment and racism as well. In society more generally. Actually, in Wales, the numbers are very small. They can fluctuate hugely, but. The last time I saw analysis on this, children from black and ethnic minority backgrounds were not overrepresented in Wales, but they are hugely in England in youth custody. But that can change on a month-by-month basis because the numbers overall are so small.
I've got an eye on the clock because we'll be asking them questions from the floor soon. But one kind of leads us into that. Is there a public appetite for change? Because any article where somebody has perhaps done something that we really disagree with, lock them up, throw away the key. Yeah. Is there an appetite for this when actually, we see policy in England, in Westminster, for expansion of the prison, sending people with serious offences to prison for much longer? Would people support that?
I think there's been a shift in public opinion around a range of issues over the last three or so years, and it's not been a shift in a positive direction, unfortunately. We know that there are higher incidences of hate crime, identity-based hate speech, and that kind of feeds into the whole system. There's a lot of othering that goes on, and with the rise of social media and the fact that people think that if they say something on social media, they don't own it.
That normalisation.
Yeah, that is absolutely, it's been normalised. So that rhetoric is there And when you've got that rhetoric, then when you try to do something different and you try to do something innovative, people are more resistant. So I'd like to think I'm wrong, but I don't think I am at the moment.
And I wonder if we... Yeah. This is a chance to open it up to people within the audience.
I just want to say one thing quickly. Who we haven't mentioned today, and a very important part of the criminal justice system, are victims. We haven't mentioned victims yet. And throughout my practice, often victims want the offenders to go to prison. And victims don't feel included often within the criminal justice system. I think if victims are included more, if they are brought to the centre of the criminal justice, that they are listened to, that they are heard, that they are respected, that they are part of the conversation, I think that is key to change people's mentality. Mm. We can't forget victims. And I think often in these conversations, victims are forgotten.
Questions from the floor now then. Ladies, I'd like a lady to ask the first question, please. IWA policy, I'll blame them, but we'll encourage more women to speak up and ask a question. Is there anyone with a burning question so far?
Hi. Hello, it's working. A most interesting address from everybody. My husband and I have been in prison, not actually as prisoners, but hopefully to help those people, those inmates, who have found themselves in that situation. I won't go over a lot of the things because it's already been said that some of them are very low in literacy and in experience, and there are huge social problems. But one of the things that happened when we were there was that the smoking rule, the smoking ban, came in. And, of course, this was applied everywhere, to all sectors, to pubs, to public places, and to prisons. And I felt this was the most ridiculous thing to apply in prisons because, in fact, it did calm down the prisoners. And once it was in action, once it was enforced, they were smoking tea bags. They were smoking their nicotine patches. And they were desperate for this nicotine high. And since then, definitely, violence has increased. Well, I suppose that's anecdotal. But what's your take on this? Because sometimes rules can't be applied throughout. You have to think ahead and how it's going to influence different people in different sectors.
One rule fits all, or should we give them a freedom in that sense?
I don't have as much experience of the issue as you have, so I wouldn't be in a position to comment about the effect it's had. But one thing I would say is that changes to the prison rules can often lead to perhaps unintended consequences, so I can certainly see that. The mandatory drug testing, for example, I think it was in 1996 when it was introduced, it led to more people actually going on to hardened drugs because they actually went through your system quicker. So people to actually get round the rules, i.e. I take past the urine sample, well, heroin went through your system in, say, 48 hours, whereas marijuana would stay in your system for longer. So what you actually had is a situation where more people were actually engaging in drugs far more harmful because of the rule change. So, I mean, you know, look, I think this extends to a whole range of things around the prison. I mean, now we've got body scanners that are coming in. This is now the new thing that's going to help us with addiction. As opposed to tackling addiction, we're just going to tackle how they come into the institution. I mean, so there's a very kind of short-term approach to a lot of this stuff. And again, this comes down to confinement. The answer to the problems of the prison always lie within the prison. That's the response we always take. Violence, we have body cameras. You know, drugs, we have scanners. It's like we cannot even imagine thinking about an alternative. So I think maybe that fits in, perhaps, but I don't have as much knowledge in this view.
My clients were outraged when they were stopped from smoking in prison, and they all told me it led to an increase in violence. Another issue, of course, is that health is in prisons is a devolved matter. And a complaint that prisoners have time and time again is that they aren't getting access to the medication they need because we haven't got this whole system approach. It isn't the alignment. Mm. So that's another jagged edge, as Rob mentions.
Professional, you've heard that, and I had patients, prisoners, who weren't being given their drugs because the explanation was they would sell them on, and so it was absolutely obscene the way they were being treated. It was inhuman, and this is what happens. So please read between the lines when you talk about violence and you talk about offending. Thank you.
Hi there. I just wondered, Rob, whether you had any information about reoffending rates, i.e. the outcomes of these custodial sentences, and whether, in theory, some people rehabilitated or whether people are going round and round the system.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point in your question I'm not sure about. So there's reoffending rates that are available and published by region. What I'm not sure about, because there's a breakdown by offence, if we're talking about whether they've been through a community sentence or a prison sentence. So I genuinely couldn't comment. There is a breakdown by prisons, and I looked this week. I don't waste my evenings. And I think the rate in Cardiff, again, a local prison, was about 70%. It's incredibly high. But, of course, it will vary by institution. You've then got to think about the sample size. But it is out there, but I actually haven't yet really been able to kind of collate that and look at it.
Hi. My question is going to highlight my naivety, because you talked earlier about part of the problem being with magistrates and with particular regard to short sentences for people who perhaps oughtn't be within the custodial system in the first place. So I know that this relates to the UK having overall responsibility, but can't we just say, OK, in Wales we're going to have a policy of talking to the magistrates and saying, don't apply custodial sentences of less than 6 months and consider alternatives. So you have to take your rules on or guidelines from elsewhere, but we're telling you, as a matter of well-being, under the legislation that we have in Wales, you're doing the wrong thing by having these short custodial sentences. So we would urge you, as custodians of society in Wales, to do something very different. Would that work, or is that just pie in the sky?
I think we've got to be careful what we wish for with regards to presumption against short sentences. The early evidence from Scotland, where it is in place, is that it's actually led to an increase in the length of sentences.
So they need to go away. Let's give them a longer sentence.
Let's give them a longer sentence to get round that presumption. I suppose there's nothing stopping the Welsh Government from saying that, but I don't think there'd be much reception from the magistrate. They will say, we've had sentencing guidelines from the Sentencing Council, we follow those guidelines.
Yeah, and maybe it's looking at it from a different perspective, because we know that First Minister made an announcement around people no longer going to prison for failure to pay council tax, for example. So it might be that rather than go on a length of sentence, we might look at the types of offending, so that we look at it on a subject sort of level rather than a sentencing level, because, you know, I share that concern that people will just get a minimum of 6 months rather than a minimum of 4 weeks. But it's a really good question, and maybe we should be looking to see what else we can put on the list of you won't go to prison if you don't pay X, you know. Television licences is one that springs to mind.
And there are good examples of local practices where they do defer certain offences. Say, if the female offender, if there's evidence that she's been a victim of domestic abuse, often in the Dyfed Powys area, they will defer that the charge for her to go and get help. So there are examples of that working, but I'm not convinced that, as Ruth said, having the presumption against short sentences is the right way to go about it.
And I know that magistrates in the room would say that actually it's the last thing they want to do is to send somebody to prison, and there are sentencing guidelines in place. I wonder then, is it something that we, as you say, we're not going down that route, but do we have faith in the alternatives? Is there, you know, from somebody who's in court, is there a confidence in the alternatives, or is actually it seen as, well, I don't think that's going to work for them. I've got no choice but to send them to prison.
I think that's been the problem of late, that there hasn't been confidence with the probation service because of the... I've got to be careful how I phrase this, but no, it was. It was a terrible... Transforming rehabilitation did not work.
This is the privatisation.
The privatisation of the community rehabilitation companies. It just didn't work. There was no confidence within the judiciary that the sentence that they were given was being carried out properly.
And particularly because this was for this lower tier of the less serious offences.
Yes, yeah. But even for higher, more serious offences, there has been, and I won't mention any specific example, but there have been examples of failing the system, which has led to some tragic, tragic events.
Mm. Can I just come in on that? Sorry, there's... I was in terms of the faith and the trust. There's information, and I've actually just asked for the Welsh only data on what they call the concordance between the recommendations within a pre-sentence report and the sentence that's given. Now, in 89% of cases that a pre-sentence report recommends custody, custody's given. And what actually happens is you get to pre-sentence report, it's lower than 89%. And when you get to community sentence, it goes down. And I think when we've previously done research in New York, now New York, in about 2012, 2013, around that period, you know, reduction in its prison population, and one of the reasons it had a real network of alternatives to incarceration, and central to that was the trust that judges had in this as an alternative. It actually was a credible, robust alternative. They weren't going to open up the newspaper the next day and see the New York Times or the equivalent, you know, judge does this, judge does this. There was a sense that it was trusted. And to just kind of sweep up that point, I was telling Peter Rayner this before the session, 2017 and 2018 was the first time that I had seen the number of immediate custodial sentences in Wales surpass the number of community sentences. Mm. More prison sentences handed out than community orders. Didn't happen in England. And it never happened in Wales in 2013, 14, 15, 16. We're still waiting for 2019. So that was a first, but prison sentences have actually overtaken community sentences now. Now we'll wait to see what happens in 2019, but that might tie into this decline in faith. Yeah. And again, to point Jenny's point, people don't want to do this, but it's happening, and that's the problem.
Yeah, but only, you mentioned pre-sentence reports, only one in four custodial cases do they ask for a pre-sentence report beforehand.
Yeah.
So these people have been sentenced without a pre-sentence report.
I know probation officers would say without that they've got less time to compile these.
Yeah. Yeah.
And presumably those people, we're not seeing a number of people, an increase in the number of people who aren't going through the criminal justice system to warrant it then being more custodial sentences.
And of course we've got to remember, since I started, and nothing to do with me, but since I started practice in 2010... There's a third less prosecutions now in Wales than in 2010.
Because
so it's gone down a third. What you've had are sentences going, and this has been happening for decades. If you ask some of the older judges, they will say, well, you know, in the 1970s we were giving somebody a community order. Now we're giving them a custodial sentence. So this has been happening for a while. Mm.
But we've seen that success in the youth sector amongst children, that, you know, where there's been a real will to reduce the number of children coming to custody and some faith in the system. And, I mean, it's not at all infallible, our community youth justice system, but, you know, you can achieve some quite remarkable results. Now, there's no reason why some of that learning couldn't apply to adult services.
Hi, yeah. I just want to ask your views on HMP Berwyn and whether building prisons on that scale really works. It's just because I used to work in children's homes, and now, in Hertfordshire, and they focus on building lots, but very small, just with like four or five kids. And, you know, they used to build them much bigger in the 90s, but they realised that just bred a culture of bullying and drug abuse and all sorts of social issues, and it was much harder to sort of get that support and like you were saying, rehabilitation and all that support that people need in those circumstances. I just want to know, you know, is HMB Berwyn too big? Are there going to be too many prisoners there? Are they going to be able to get the support?
Yeah, I mean... there's so many ways we can look at the question of size. But I think one of the things I'm interested in relation to that, and I'm sorry if this doesn't satisfy but we could talk about that for a while, is the location of prisoners. So where they're from. And one of the real kind of aims of Bedouin was that we were told that this was about bringing prisoners from North Wales close to home, about moving people close to home. 68% of the population at the end of December were from England. Mm. 45% of Welsh prisoners at Bedouin are not from North Wales. There were 12 in Powys and less than 5 in Ceredigion. The rest are from South Wales. So even within the Welsh context, we've now got, I mean, I'm from North East Wales and regularly have to hop on that train back. It's a long journey. Mm. And I think this was put forward, and to talk about the impact of children and visiting and the level of displacement. We had a report in August of 2018, and there's a fantastic map. Unfortunately, I didn't do it. My colleague did. I could have claimed it, but it was his. And it shows you the level of where they're coming from. And I think that the distances, we know the research shows that distances are a major impediment to the maintenance of family contact. And that's just one aspect of Bedouin. And I just want to, in case we don't get a chance to say this, we are on the cusp here. The UK government are looking at building another one here. Mm, mm. Don't be surprised if you open up your BBC browser one day and see them. They've announced plans for another one. That's on the horizon.
Different prisons have different functions, though, don't we? Don't they? So yeah. Are we arguing then that actually we do need more prisons? Because Bedouin is training, you've got two local prisons, you've got there are different functions for them, aren't they? So it may be that actually they're better off at Bedouin.
Bedouin still half full?
It's about 500 short of being full.
Because I've been to Bedouin, and Bedouin is at the edge of a kind of an industrial estate, the edge of, on the outskirts of Wrexham. It's an interesting place. Mm. If you would have planned it, you would never have put a super prison in North East Wales. It was never going to be a local prison.
But the danger is here, we're doing it again, the solution is prison. Do we need another prison? Do you know, why are we talking, again, we've just been round the houses, we talked about how confinement doesn't work, and it always leads back to more prison. Mm. And one of the things I would love to see, actually, and there's a huge... The Welsh Government, of course, are responsible in these areas, but there's an issue of capacity. But while the Welsh Government isn't responsible for the criminal justice system as we know it, there is a space there to actually have a really big thing, a bit like the blueprints, and have a think, what would the whole system look like? Mm-hmm. What could we do different? Draw upon evidence. Make it in line with ecological conditions of crime and harm and services in Wales. Really draw down on what this system could look like. And there's your answer when we're talking about designing out prison. Mm. The probation service is this minor partner in this relationship. It's the poor relation. Look at the money spent on prisons versus probation. Probation is, someone here should be from probation, really, because that's the alternative, as Ruth said earlier. It's already there. But we talk about prisons and we come back to prison, more prison. And that's exactly what Robert Buckland and the MOJ are looking at now. And I think that we need to kind of get beyond that. Prison isn't the answer. It hasn't been for 200 years when Dickens visited the United States, and it isn't in 2020.
Yeah, and think how much money you could save. Yeah. You know, if male prisoners were costing in Swansea and Park nearly £30,000. And it's happened. It's happened in Northern Ireland. They emptied a wing and they used that money to spend it on probation.
Yeah.
And I know I've mentioned this figure before, but I think it's important to say it again. 67% of the MOJ budget is spent on prisons. Surely that's not right.
Speaking to a probation officer this morning who felt that actually sometimes you do need to take that person out of that chaotic setting that they're in, and prison perhaps is the best alternative so that they're not close to that drug network, so that they're getting the support, whether that's in the prison, but the ideal...
Sometimes prison does work. I've had clients where a short, sharp shock worked, but they are exceptions. Mm. They are the exception.
Bringing it back to your question, though, perhaps the children's homes are the example, the secure settings are the example. Do we need another hillside, for example, to relieve that pressure so that there can be alternatives, if not the secure, but something so that there's a safe environment? So small pockets, perhaps...
We do need small therapeutic educational centres that are safe for children, because we need to remember that some of these institutions, not only are these children very traumatised when they go in, but some of them are much further traumatised by the experiences there. Some of the reports we've seen from places like Feltham and the like, where children are receiving violence not only from their peers but also from staff, is really worrying. And the size thing does make a difference there, because the staff are struggling to control the place and they're using more and more restraint and violence to do that. So we definitely need... We will probably always have a very, very small number of children needing custody or secure accommodation in Wales, but it definitely needs to be small. It just needs to be big enough so that you can have education and decent mental health care in particular, but health, all kinds of health care. So it's just getting that balance. Yeah. And we definitely can't have everything in Meath and Bridgend because of the geography of Wales.
And certainly, yes, what the probation colleague said is probably right, that times people need to be taken out of the chaotic lifestyle existence that they have. They need to be protected from that. Mm. They need to be taken out, but that doesn't mean they need to be put into a prison. Mm. There needs to be something else in place so that they can be protected, that they can be removed. And I think it's interesting that we've touched upon rehabilitation. We know that people who are on short sentences don't get access to rehabilitation services. So we need something different so that they can be rehabilitated and supported in a way to move on that is safe and therapeutic and different, so that they don't go back to the same. But it's not an either or. It's got to be something different. It's about thinking about different things differently again.
And they're being taken out of the environment, I think, is a little bit of a myth. It's not a complete myth, and some children are in horribly neglectful environments that they need and dangerous environments they need to be kept safe from. But actually, Wales has got a plethora of very, very small independent children's homes throughout its rural areas, Snowdonia, Powys, etc., where children from urban England in particular, but sometimes urban Wales, are being placed because people think, oh, they'll be all right in the middle of that field. they're not. They feel alien, they run. Yeah. Communications are such they get picked up at the door by people who are exploiting them. It's not working for them, but they are being sent there with people thinking that will be the good thing for them.
So it's too alienating.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
I've got two questions, actually. I want to go back to the issue that you picked up on, Rob, about the answer isn't in the prison themselves. In a former role, not at the IWA, we used to run events that brought together people from the justice sector with homelessness, because a key issue, obviously, is people facing homelessness and the technicalities and the problems of that, and things have moved on quite a long way since then. But we also, in the course of that, met somebody who had set up an organisation in Scotland that was looking at how to make a more positive experience out of being in prison. And it was somebody who came from a professional background who had been in for fraud, and he ended up advising, I forget who, but somebody within the Scottish government, the Scottish justice system, on this is what it looks and feels like, talking person to person on that basis. Now, I guess my question is, do you know, or does the room know, if that sort of similar thing exists in Wales from a Welsh perspective, is my first question. And then secondly, it's going back, Sally, to you around, so there has been a huge leap forward from the point of view of youth justice. What made it work? What particular were the characteristics or the people or the bloody-mindedness or the persistence or the Overton window of political opportunity? What was it that made it work? What can we learn from that in order to repeat it and make it and apply it in a different way? Because what we want to do with this conversation is show what could be possible and show a way to make that possible.
So it was there's somebody who spoke to a minister about the
formal relationship that he has.
Okay, I'm not sure that it exists in Wales, because which minister would they talk to? That would be the issue. It may well be something that the Welsh government say, okay, we're not responsible for it, but we really want to hear about it as part of us developing a future policy. But it's not something I'm aware of.
As for Sally, then.
Yeah. So. there was I'm trying to remember when they came in, but there was something called youth offending teams came in. I think, I'm looking at Leanne in the audience, she might remember. It's about 25 years ago, youth offending teams. Anyway, youth offending teams came in England and Wales, and we've seen this drop in both England and Wales. It's not been just a Welsh success. And they're multidisciplinary. So, police officers, health workers, social workers, housing workers, etc., came together to respond to substance misuse, particularly importantly. People with that expertise came together to respond to children that were either committing crimes or at risk of committing crimes. And more now, they work with children who are at risk of committing crimes. And diversion from any kind of prosecution actually has been a huge success. Because most children or young people who commit crimes grow out of it. That's what the stats have said for probably centuries, actually, not just decades. So we know that. So to not criminalise them as children is really important, not to get them into that cycle. But I think that kind of multidisciplinary response. But there's still a huge issue of those that do end up in the system as to what their backgrounds are and how we can have helped them much, much earlier in their early years, in their first few years of life, for example, to make sure that you didn't have this almost inevitability that they might end up there. So we should be almost replicating that response in how we respond to children more generally who need additional help. So in our early year services, where children are being excluded from school, might have nothing to do with crime, but they're being excluded from school, and there are real behaviour challenges. Instead of sending them from pillar to post, which happens at the moment, we wrap our services around them and say, let's help you now before things get worse.
With the numbers dropping, though, of children going into prison, ultimately, we've seen it with things like children not going, if they're having a mental health crisis, not being taken to police stations, for example. There was legislation that we had to stop, there was a ban put in place there. Do you think it needs something quite brutal like that for children to be prevented from going to jail that would start us thinking of ever more creative ways, though? Do you need to put a deadline in place?
I think you're right. I think that ultimately just saying that we will no longer accept children being held in police cells for mental health reasons, for example, in the end is what's cracked that one. Almost sometimes they end up sitting in police canteens with a police officer for many hours till someone can come and support them. Sometimes we just do need to draw the line and say we're not going to do this. So I want us to draw the line and say we're not going to send Welsh children over the border to be held in secure accommodation, except in the most extreme circumstances, whether that's for welfare reasons or custody reasons. So that would be one thing to draw the line on. We're not going to send Welsh children to a prison at all. Would be another one that I think we should just be saying altogether.
Any more from the floor?
Hiya. I'm going to do the really horrific academic thing of like this is a bunch of comments rather than the kind of more reflections actually. So Jenny, you mentioned keeping children out of police detention. There has been that drive, and there's also kind of diversion for women. I think one of the things, and it's possible that we could do this within Wales, although whether criminal justice becomes devolved and therefore this is indeed possible. But I think some of it comes down to responsibility and for society taking responsibility for the fact that people end up in these situations. So to an extent, we take responsibility where children have offended or have engaged in behaviours that can be constructed as them having offended. But I think, just kind of to take it right back, why people are getting involved in the criminal justice system in the first place, and this has been kind of touched upon, but also, I mean, not simply health and so on, but also racial perceptions. And certainly, I'm not saying that the judiciary are racist, but there is certainly institutional racism that runs throughout various criminal justice organisations. And it might be partly kind of those perceptions and myths that, that drive what we see. But the question, I think the bigger question is there some scope for decriminalisation? Because certainly that would address some of the problems. There are certainly things on the statute book that don't need to be criminal offences. So what, if we can kind of reimagine society, responsibility, the culture of the criminal justice system, questions around decriminalisation, potential for restorative justice, if we're thinking about the role of victims. And we caution with the role of victims in an adversarial criminal justice system, it is the state versus the defendant, and therefore there should be other questions about whether victims should indeed get involved. Some kind of ideas that I'm floating, so I'd appreciate
them. I guess, Rhys, that may be something that Lord Thomas and his panel has tried to look at. If we do something very differently here, because what we're doing at the moment is flawed, this is the chance to have blue sky thinking. What are we going to do different here in Wales?
For example, we looked at Portugal, where they've decriminalised the possession of drugs. It's not against the law, they've decriminalised it with huge success. Portugal, a country of 11 million, has far fewer drug-related deaths than Cardiff, Newport and Swansea, 700,000 or so. You've got to balance that with how, you know, some of the media and the press would react. Decriminalisation is something you can look at.
Sally?
I've got one specific bugbear about decriminalisation that I want to mention, because the numbers are so small that it affects a too high proportion of these children. It's children living in care, particularly in children's homes, but also sometimes in foster homes, who are being criminalised for acts that they would not be if they were living with their birth families. So, you know, examples I've heard of is of a child perhaps throwing a cup in anger, you know, at a worker, and being prosecuted for that, breaking a window, and hitting, but perhaps not injuring a member of staff. They're all the sort destroying property, you know, destroying things in their room, for example. These are often very, very disturbed children who have been through a lot of trauma. I'm not saying we shouldn't, you know, they do need to actually learn to manage their behaviour, and they need to be supported to do that. But in most of those situations, their parents or whatever relative they're speaking with would not be calling the police on them. They might be asking somebody to help them manage their child's behaviour, but they wouldn't be calling the police on them. And it is a specific issue that's a real problem. There's a huge rate of criminalisation of children in care. It's enormous. And we don't actually have any formal guidance around that at the moment in Wales. There is some in England, and the criminalisation rates are a bit lower in England.
There are some practical things that's happening in the court at the moment with regards to decriminalisation. So a child appearing in the court for the first occasion can only get a referral order or prison. But what you'll find now, actually, magistrates are given several kind of referrals. They're only supposed to give it once. Yeah. They're actually given it three, four, five. And that's not on their record. And then they have assistance then from probation. So decriminalisation is happening, but there's no kind of guidance to it. It's just really you're lucky with who the magistrate happens to be and if they're sympathetic or not.
So it's a patchwork approach.
It's very patchwork.
But the constitution is an issue, isn't it? I mean, and that's, you know, it limits the vision, I think, from what the Welsh Government can actually achieve. And the work we did wrote a paper on drug policy, and what we found is that after a while, civil servants just stopped asking. Rather than campaigning for change, we want you to decriminalise it, or the answer was no, so you just stop asking. And then the flip side to that as well is it not only does it limit your own vision, what you can do in relation to children or what you can do in relation to drug policy, where we've seen, say, a progressive Welsh Government policy, and I'm thinking specifically in relation to the prisoners of unintentionally homeless, to the housing support for unintentionally homeless prisoners, which was removed. You know, a lot of the evidence around that is because of the use of short-term sentences, you know, local authorities couldn't cope, actually, with the number of people that were continually coming through the system. What can the Welsh Government do? Can it abolish short-term sentences? No, the only thing it can actually do is manage its expectations, manage its policy, which was essentially to just roll that progressive policy back. Her Majesty's Inspector of Prisons, in a report into Liverpool, or Out Course in Liverpool, said that it was a model that England should copy. What we actually did is pulled ours back so it was in line with England's because of that. So it's not just that we can't achieve in terms of criminalisation, the progressive policies that the Welsh Government use within their own current competencies are also under threat because of the problems that flow in from a criminal justice system that you can't really influence.
We're out of time. Oh. Thank you, everyone. We have had a particular viewpoint. We don't have somebody here from Westminster, from the MOJ, from probation, so it has been a skewed view, perhaps. So as we leave, we'll probably be lynched. But there's plenty of time for further discussion afterwards, and feel free to lynch one of those.
Thank you very much indeed, Jenny, and all the panellists. I hesitate often to wrap up these sorts of conversations because there's too much to wrap up in a short, handy soundbite. I'd like to do three things. First of all, thank you very much indeed, everybody here, for a very informed, educational conversation. And I think the challenge for us when we put these events on in partnership with Cardiff, Cardiff University, we have these fantastic thinking sessions where Claire Sanders, who I'm afraid has had to slip off early, and Ed Bridges and Laura and Andy from the IWA team at the back, think about what will be the key issues that will be both topical and necessary to talk about. And that's really one of the spaces that we want to be in. What is the thing that needs to be unpicked and given a bit more oxygen and a bit more sunlight on a key issue? And this was very definitely, we felt, one of those. The challenge is always to have a really lively and thoughtful mix of speakers from a number of different perspectives. So thank you very much indeed, everybody here this evening. We're conscious that, no, we haven't got somebody from probation, we haven't got somebody from Whitehall and so forth. I think this is the part of the joy of doing a series of events is you can consider those other perspectives another time, potentially. We're grateful to Cardiff University for their ongoing support and also to Evershed Sutherland. Now, I'm at that stage when I had to put my glasses on to read what I've written. Getting under the skin of why something matters is what we're interested in, and opening it up, because there are choices to be made for Wales, and we're interested in making sure that people think very, very carefully indeed about what those choices are. So you may be wondering what happens next, where does this go, where does this conversation go? So my colleague Clear at the front will be podcasting this, so this will go out to people who are on our membership, and also so that's a good opportunity if you're not a member of the IWA, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say this, to join the IWA. We're very, very reasonable indeed, so do have a chat with anybody on the team if you'd like to know more, and I'm very happy to talk about what that means. So there'll be a podcast of it, and there's also going to be a write-up of it. So we will make sure that the key points and issues that to be considered get to committees that need to be looking at this both here and elsewhere. So we do a bit of a think about who could usefully listen and hear what people are thinking about on these issues. And there's obviously also a fair amount of engagement on social media. So I know some of you have been tweeting this evening, because I've been tweeting too. But do please spread the key issues far and wide. Now, other things that we're working on at the same time, and perhaps we can have a chat about some of them over a drink outside afterwards, our three themes are: what does a strong, confident democracy look and feel like in a modern Wales? And all of our events are around our three themes. So strong, confident democracy, we're looking at interparliamentary relations post-Brexit, another very interesting, very complicated set of issues that often doesn't cross the horizons of people in their day-to-day lives, but I actually think it really, really should do. We've got our next media audit, so the only independent audit of the media landscape in Wales, coming out in June, and our media, a fairly major media summit. I think it's the fifth in our series of those. And we've also recently launched a tool to enable people to engage with key socioeconomic data of every single community in Wales that has more than 1,000 people in it. So if you haven't come across understandingwelshplaces.wales, then I suggest you go and have a look. It's also bilingual. So that's first phase of that project, another partnership with Wizard and the Carnegie Trust. The website itself is funded by Welsh Government. As an independent think tank, we don't take any government or political party money, and we think that's super important. Another interest of ours is high-performing, responsive, essential public services. And we're also looking at what makes a successful, clean, green and fair economy for the future of Wales. So some of that is looking at how do we get Wales powered by renewables by 2035. We're looking also wanting to look at land use policy in Wales. And we've also got a new colleague, Jack, at the back, who will give everybody a wave, who's focusing on a foundational economy in Wales. And again, what can we do to make the money that is in the system already circulate better for greater benefits to people in Wales? So this conversation and our debate series and all of our events are just part of a whole strand of what we do to have a lively, informed, thoughtful, reflective conversation about the future of Wales and our mission of making Wales better. So thank you very much indeed for joining us. Do come again, join up and come and have a drink outside. Thank you.